Hey, everybody. Can y'all hear me in the back?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to say that. I'm an addict in recovery known as Danny Huggs. Grateful to be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I get the honor and the privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. I met Jimmy a long time ago at a convention in Texas. And there's something about Jimmy that people gravitate towards him. His personality, his character, and I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years. And one thing that somebody mentioned to me at the dinner, by the way, thank you for the dinner. That was incredible. Incredible. So this guy, Phil, who I met a couple years ago, he's like, man, Jimmy knows everybody. And I said, no. Everybody knows Jimmy. See, because, and I was telling him this earlier that, you know, our 12th step in the basic text, it says that we make ourselves visible and available. And that's Jimmy. He makes himself visible and available. When people were coming into Southern California, when he's being of service, he takes the time to, like, take them to the World Service office. He takes some sightseeing. He takes people to the mall. Just whatever he can do, he does. And people appreciate that. And people don't care what you know until they know how much you care. And Jimmy started working with me a couple years now. If you don't know Jimmy Jam, hold on to your seats. Arkansas Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, I introduce to you my friend, my sponsor, Jimmy Jam from Idaho.
Check, check. Can you hear me in the back? Ah, this guy thinks he's going to steal the show. No. Oh, I'm an addict in recovery. My name is Jimmy. So grateful to God just for being here, just for the opportunity to be clean and be in Arkansas with you guys tonight. The fact that somebody believed in me. Janet, thank you, wherever you're at. Thank you for believing in me. And I have a feeling this might be a little bit of an emotional share. I got a lot of stuff going on emotionally, you know, not necessarily externally, but I've been clean since December the 12th, 1995. So I've been clean 29 years. If you have 30 years or more, would you please raise your hand? I was your moment of silence. All those people that raised their hand had a moment of silence. They have a moment of silence and they prayed for the addict that still suffered, and I was that addict. And it's my belief that I got here through the power of prayer. That someone prayed for me. I know for certain that my mother prayed for me. I know for certain that my grandmother prayed for me. And I know for sure that those people would raise their hands, prayed for me. Everybody in this room was a moment of silence at one particular time. Everybody in this room had one day clean. Everybody in this room at some point said, please help me. And that's a powerful thing to really conceive. Because I truly believe that if you're in this room, you are an answered prayer. Amen. You're someone's answered prayer, whether it was your mother, your grandmother, your father, your daughter, your son, a niece, a nephew, somebody had a working relationship with God. And they petitioned God on your behalf. And so I am a firm believer in that. And I am so grateful that you guys had that moment of silence for me. And I want to just give praise to the convention committee, man. Listen, let's give them a big hand. Yeah. This has been... Love is the most powerful thing that we have, man, and I've experienced it here from the very onset, from the phone calls to the welcome, you know, and when someone cooks for you, like Chuck and all the fellas, man, and Marshall, when they cook for you and they fill you up, you know what I mean, for free. They didn't ask for no money. They didn't ask for anything. They just said, come take a seat, come get some food. That is an act of love. You know, and I'm so grateful that I was on the receiving end of that this weekend, and it does my heart good. You know, it's been a beautiful thing to be at the 15th annual Arkansas Regional Convention. The 15th annual. The ties that bind us together. Y'all gonna mess me up. Got the air going on. The lights coming on. It's like, I'm cold. I'm hot. Let there be light. You know. All I know, there's a bunch of zombies walking around here tonight somewhere out there. And we're in here trying to live life, right? I thought about that as like MacArthur Park in Los Angeles. They're going to be walking around like mommies. Yeah, you can go down to Southern California, down to the local park downtown. And it's like that every day. The walk of the zombies, you know. So I am so excited to be here, man. This is a real honor and a real treat. You know, to have Danny here. And Danny just celebrated 24 years on Monday. Congratulations, Danny. Danny and I got to go to Murray County Jail in Nashville, Tennessee, in Murray County. And on Monday night, he celebrated. The next day, we got to go into the prison. And I host a virtual meeting at a little meeting I got clean in Hollywood. I'm from Hollywood, California, originally. I got clean in the Southern California region in this little noon meeting, Hollywood High Noon. And to this very day, I still hold a service position at that group. You know, it just went during the pandemic. We went online and we stayed online. And when things got better, they went back to meeting purpose. But we already had a different face to the meeting. There were people that were coming from different parts of the world that had joined the meeting. And my heart said, we cannot just abandon these people. Just like a lot of people didn't want to abandon their in-person meetings, a lot of people didn't want to abandon the virtual meetings. And so on Tuesday, this Tuesday, Danny and I hosted the meeting from Hollywood, the Hollywood High Noon meeting from inside the Murray County Prison for the first time. We hosted it from inside the prison. And why that is so special is because for the last few years, the guys have been coming via the virtual platform. They've been showing up every Tuesday. They sign on to the meeting. They read from the... They're there in their stripes. They got basic text on their desks. And I got to meet and hug some of those guys in person. They've been seeing me on the screen for a couple of years now. And I got to hug some of them. And it was just an emotional thing. And then we got to do H&I the next day. We got to share... for the women in the prison, was the first time they'd ever had a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in that jail for the women. It's a big deal. It was a big deal. And I just love that little noon meeting I got cleaning, man. I got to tell you, the people there that loved on me, I came straight from the streets to the seats. You know, I didn't have the opportunities that the other people had. I am here as a direct result of what you call a Narcotics Anonymous 12-step call. A good old-fashioned Narcotics Anonymous 12-step call is what got me here. I was hurting. I was suffering. I was in a lot of pain. I was 29 years old, man, and I got to the end of the road that our literature talks about, where we can either function with or without drugs. And what is there left to do? And so I prayed. I got to a place, man, where I was suffering and I was hurting and I was coughing up that yellow and green liver bile. And I hadn't had a solid bowel movement in a long time. And I was coughing up blood because I had torn the lining out of my stomach from all the alcohol I was drinking. You know, I was just abusing myself and I couldn't stop using. And it didn't start like that. You know, our literature talks about, you know, at first it was pleasurable. Then the euphoria begins to wear off. And then we get to experience the ugly side of addiction. So it was fun at 12 years old, smoking weed and having a good time, getting the munchies and, you know, doing that stuff, drinking some whiskey and feeling all right. you know, doing some cross. Some of you guys know about cross tops, so you make your head tingle. Some of you guys. Someone gave me some cross tops in like eighth or ninth grade, and you know, I was like, yeah, I'll take that. I smoked hash oil. That was fun, you know, when you're young and you're experiencing life, and you know. But there was a lot of stuff that came up to that, you know, and I might get into some of that. But you know, I picked up at a time in my life, man. There was a lot of hurt before the drugs came. There was a lot of behavior before the drugs came. There was a lot of damage that came prior to me picking up. And I don't know necessarily that that's what prompted me to use, if it was peer pressure or whatever it is, but I had an allergic reaction eventually. I didn't become addicted in one day. It came over time. But addiction took me on this road, man, that separated me from my family, my loved ones, from God, and from myself. I wasn't the same person who picked up that ended in 1995. I was not the same person. And my mama didn't raise me to be the person that I had become. My mama was a little country girl from the Boot Hill of Missouri. She was born in Kennett. And you know, I got this nickname Jimmy Jam, and I'm from Hollywood, California. But I spent all my summers in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas. Just outside of Jonesboro. And at the ripe age of 15 years old, I told my mom, I said, Mama, please, I want to go live with Aunt Becky. I don't want to be here. I was going through so much, man. At 15 years old, I was dying. And I said, Mama, please, can I go live with Aunt Becky? And she called her sister. My Aunt Becky's her little sister. There's just two of them. And my Aunt Becky took me in, and I had some cousins that lived there. I had three women cousins and one older male cousin. And they took me in, and I went to live in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, my second semester of high school. Anybody go to FFA? Anybody, you guys know what FFA is here in Arkansas? Some of y'all gotta know what FFA is. Future Farmers of America. Well, I went from Hollywood High School to Future Farmers of America. Yeah, if you guys ever seen that movie Footloose, that was me, right? And I showed up in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, and they didn't know how to say my last name because my father's from Mexico and I got a Spanish last name, and I dealt with a little bit of, I don't know if you want to call it prejudice, but they made fun of me, you know, and I came in a little late, and you know, for whatever reason, the girls liked me and the guys weren't too fond of me, you know, but I joined off-season football and I could dance, right? That was my nickname was Jimmy Jam when I was a little kid. So I started dancing, right? And they were like, do that thing you do, do that thing you do. And I was doing the moonwalk and they were tripping off me. I came out fat laces and, you know, I dressed different. You know, they had boots on and, you know, and Wrangler jeans. And I was dressing different. And so I came here and I met some people. You know, and back then the little town that I lived in was a dry county in Lawrence County. There wasn't no alcohol. But for some reason, every weekend, even sometimes during the week, man, we would find some booze. There would be a cake party at somebody's, you know, shed out in some farm somewhere, and we would fill up the car and we'd get out there and we would drink Southern Comfort Punch until the lights, you know, till the sun came up. You know, and my poor aunt had to deal with all the blowback. You know, when you live in a little town and there's 3,600 people, everybody knows your business. Everybody knows what you did the night before. Everybody knows who you're with. I remember I came home one night. I went out with one of my buddies. You know, we went on a double date, right? And went to the drive-in movie theater. And I came home with hickeys on my neck, you know, and I was real drunk. And my aunt in the morning, she said, what is that on your neck? And because I didn't know I had hickeys on my neck, you know, and she was so mad at me, you know, because I'm 15 years old and everybody knows, you know, okay, go get the cold spoon out of the freezer. You put it in the freezer, take the hickey off. I had to learn all this stuff, right? So my life, something that didn't work. So, you know, my life from that point, right, you know, a lot of stuff happened and I ended up going back to Hollywood and things got worse when I got back home, you know, because at 17 years old, someone offered me a bump of cocaine for the first time, man, something happened, you know. It's like me and my best friend, you know, we were up on the hills in Hollywood, and a bunch of us were drinking and having a good time, and my friend offered me a bump. I said yes, my friend said no. He went on to go be an engineer, went to San Diego State University. He got married and had kids. And I went off to smoke crack cocaine out of a car antenna. That's kind of like where our lives went. We went separate directions. And that's kind of how that went, you know. And so for a long time, man, you know, I had to deal with all the stuff that comes along with the suffering of active addiction, you know. And it wasn't just about the drugs for me, because, you know, at a particular time when I was in junior high and I'm trying to navigate, I started being attracted to the guys that had fast conversation for slow thinking people. You know, these guys were hustlers and drug dealers. You know, I got older, I learned about credit card fraud, insurance fraud. I learned about, you know, counterfeit funny money. You know, the guys I ran around with, they did all that stuff. And somehow, man, I had one foot in that world and one foot over here trying to do the right thing, because I had a mother that loved me. I had a praying mother, you know, and a praying grandmother. My grandmother, she lived in Kennett. And boy, I tell you what, man, you know, I was raised with some manners. You went to see grandma and grandpa, it was yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. And they had a paddle waiting for you. It was a paddle in the bathroom. You know, if you got in trouble, you got a paddling, you know. And that's an issue with me and my wife right now, because I got some kids and she don't believe in paddling, you know. And I said, paddling did me good, you know. And so you better get some fundamentals right before you get married. You have different views on stuff, but it's a non-negotiable for her. So this timeout stuff, man, I want to put my son timeout for at least 3 days sometimes, you know. He needs a good little paddling, you know. But, you know, nonetheless, man, my life unfolded, you know, and there was good times mixed in with some of the confusion and the contradiction. There was a lot of stuff that happened, and you know, I don't want to go into a whole lot of it, but I lived a decent life, and then something happened, and then it just, the addiction grabbed a hold of me. The cost of getting high got higher and higher and higher, and I hit lower and lower and lower bottoms. And eventually what ended up happening, man, is I got to a place where I was in desperation, like I shared about. I was 29 years old, man. I was living in this little apartment in East Hollywood. And I remember being in that fetal position, and I said, please, God, I don't want to die like this. I begged God, please, I don't want to die like this. I'll never forget that. I'm very clear on who it was that I prayed to. I didn't scream out, Narcotics Anonymous, would you help me? I didn't ask for the Los Angeles Police Department to help me. I didn't ask for some treatment center to come get me. I said, God, please help me. I'm very clear on that. And you know what? The answered prayer was Narcotics Anonymous. You guys were that prayer. You guys are the answered prayer. You know, and you are the gift. You know, our second tradition says that Narcotics Anonymous is a God-given program. I don't go over it. I don't go under it. I don't try to go around it. I could tell you that I'm so appreciative of this gift. You know what the gift is? You unwrap it. It's the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. You got to unwrap the gift here. But I want to tell you that I love the gift, but not as much as I love the gift giver. Because there's a gift and there's a gift giver. And so I never want to forget about the gift giver. And so this thing has been a journey, man. It's been a beautiful thing. And one of the things that happened for me, man, is I was able to go back and visit my family in Walnut Ridge. And you know, my aunt, I would go back and see my aunt and my cousin sometime. And everybody had kind of moved away. And my cousin moved here. But we would come back together. And I remember, man, I said, you know, I got to get to a meeting when I'm over here. I said, where are you going? I'm going to a meeting. And I would shoot over to Jonesboro because they didn't have any meetings in Walnut Ridge. And I would go over to the Cope Without Dope meeting in Jonesboro. Yeah. And I would go where you guys at? Come on, where my Coke Without Dope people? Recovery on the Ridge. And I would go there occasionally. And I remember when I first started going there, they had this one little room. And then a couple years later, I'd come back, and then they had this big room, you know? And one time I went there, I was with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, and we got there, and you know, faces changed, and I was there, and people were kind and nice, you know, but, you know, people didn't know me, and I didn't really know them, but there was this one young lady. She comes up to us, and she was really kind, and she introduced herself, and she said, where are you from, and welcome, you know, to the meeting, and we got to talking, and you know, and So I told her, you know, I used to live here. You know, one time I was in high school and I was, I was a Bobcat, Walnut Ridge Bobcat, and she proceeded to tell me that she lived in a town not too far from there, and that they were the rivals, that we were rivals, you know. I said, oh, that's pretty trippy. And she told me what town she was from. I said, wow, that's pretty interesting. I said, when I was 15 years old, I went to that town, and we went on a little canoeing trip, and I was 15 years old, and I lost my virginity to a girl in that trip up in Highland, Arkansas, you know, and so we got to talking, you know, and it was, you know, hanging out, and I don't know, I think my girlfriend went to the bathroom or something, and somehow the conversation, I said, what is your name? And she told me her name, and I said, oh. I said, well, what is your maiden name? And she told me her maiden name. And she goes, I didn't take your virginity, did I? I said, yes, you did. What? How in the heck does that happen? She had 16 years clean at the time, you know, out of the blue. And I still had a little picture of her from my high school things. I had her phone number saved, you know. She's my first, man, you know what I mean? And I got to see her a couple days ago at the meeting before coming here. She met me at the meeting, gave me a hug, and wished me best. And what a crazy story that is. And she gave me permission to tell the story. I don't want to tell the story unless I got permission. But never in 1,000 years would I have thought that would have happened. You know, I'm from Hollywood, California. I started DJing when I was 15 years old. I lived this crazy life. My life was full of music and hip hop, and it was insane. You know what I mean? But I have this other thing that I was raised with. All my summers coming here, and my grandmother owned and they ran the movie theater in Kennett, Missouri. And I would go visit grandma, and they had the drive-in movie theater. And it was wild, man. You know, when I look back at it, Tommy's Drive-In. And I would go with my mother, and I would visit all of her friends that she grew up with, and we'd go visit, and it was such a big part. It was a big part of my upbringing. You know, I remember going to the river and having to come. I'm from Hollywood, and they say, you got to check yourself for ticks. What are ticks? We don't have ticks and chiggers in Hollywood, all right? There's no ticks and chiggers in Hollywood. What are you guys talking about? And we would go down, you know, and I'd look for poison ivy and poison oak and check for chiggers and, you know. Oh, man. And my grandmother would cook catfish and, you know. So I have some roots here, you know. And coming here with Danny, it was a bittersweet trip, you know, because we came through Nashville and I got to go through Walnut Ridge and went to go see my uncle, who's my last. You know, he's the last one. You know, my mother died in 2012. My aunt died a few years back, not too long ago. My Aunt Becky, she was just like my mother. You know, she was right there with Mama. I just loved her. And then she died, and my uncle, you know, her husband, he's 95 years old. He's living in Walnut Ridge, and he's hanging in there. But I got to tell you, man, it was heartbreaking to go visit him because I didn't know if this was going to be the last time that I get to see him. I had so many childhood memories of running through that house with my cousins. The house is kind of falling apart. You know, things aren't together because he can't really do much. You know, my cousin's living with, you know, she put her life on hold to come take care of her daddy. And she's there, you know, and we had breakfast with her. And the sad thing is that my oldest cousin, who died a little while back from a drug overdose, that my uncle had all of his son's stuff in the carport under a tarp. That was all that was left of his life, was all this furniture. It was just deteriorating. It was just deteriorating and being, you know, abused by the weather. But that's, you know, and I don't want my life to look like that. I don't want it to end of my life to me, to all my remains be in the carport under a tarp. That's not what happens for us in Narcotics Anonymous. I remember going to a Narcotics Anonymous memorial when I was new in recovery. There was a woman named Vita that used to work at the World Service Office. I was brand new in recovery, and I had met her once or twice, and I didn't, you know, I didn't know the power of Narcotics Anonymous yet. Really, I didn't understand. And I knew that it was important to go to this memorial service. So many people had loved her. And they had it at this big hall. It was a huge hall, big bingo hall. could probably hold 1,000 people, man. It was huge. And I remember these people, all these people from Narcotics Anonymous showed up. And I thought to myself, man, that, you know, I didn't think I was going to live to be 30 years old. But this woman lived a life, and she died clean, and people were there honoring her, and people were laughing, and they were loving. I said, that's what I want. I want an infinity chip.
Right.
I want a Narcotics Anonymous infinity chip. I want to be like the Beeb. I want to keep the promise. I want to die clean. You know, and I know that, you know, that's the goal here, is to live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. And we have to have something. We have, at some point, we gotta leave this place better than we found it.
Yes.
That is the goal, I think, of every person, and we each have a responsibility to pour into the well-being of Narcotics Anonymous, regardless of where you live or how long you've been clean or whatever your resentments are or whatever your service position is. Everybody has an equal responsibility to keep the doors open. Everybody in my home group, right in Star, Idaho. When I moved to Eagle, we this little town right next to where I live is in Star, Idaho. We started this meeting, and at this meeting, we put a chair in the middle of the room. We sit in a circle, and every week when we make the announcement, we say that chair is there to represent the addict who has yet to come. That moment of silence, and it's there for those that are returning, that have relapse and are coming back. And then we say it's there for those that have died clean and left the responsibility to keep the doors open. I never want to get, listen, I love my predecessors, man. I am sitting in shade today because of a tree somebody else planted. Just hands down, I got clean in Southern California, man, and there was these men and women that I got a chance to meet. Some of them are still alive, and some of them were sponsored by Jimmy Kennan himself. And so, you know, I put the big ear on, you know, and, you know, 29 years ago, if you had 20 plus years, that was huge, you know, and it was a handful of people. And I would make this little noon meeting, and there was a couple of guys, man, and every time they shared, man, I listened up. They didn't always say stuff. They when they talked, I listened. They weren't like me, you know, every meeting come in with your hand up, like, I got some wisdom, boy. I got 90 days clean, I'm going to tell them about the traditions. You know how we get 90 days clean? And then we say, and for you newcomers, you can do it too. Oh, man. I'm so grateful for sponsorship, man, because I got me a good Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, and he put me right in my place, man. He put me to work. He told me, Jimmy, Narcotics Anonymous is a $1 million program. We're going to shove it up your butt a nickel at a time. You know? And, you know, he was like that, man. He did not play. He did not mince words. You know, he said a lot of things that hurt my feelings, but you know what? More importantly, he loved me. And he loved me, and you know what he did for me? He took me through step one and tradition one, step two and tradition two. And that's how I started my recovery. And at 6 months clean, man, he said, you're coming with me. We're going somewhere. We're going to go through this panel. I said, what's a panel? He goes, we're going to do H&I. I said, well, I only have 6 months clean because you have enough clean time to go in. I said, yeah, okay, where are we going? He said, East Lake Juvenile Hall. East Lake Juvenile Hall? I said, ouch, East Lake Juvenile Hall. You know, East Lake Juvenile Hall in Los Angeles, if you go there, it's mostly Latino young kids that are gang members, right? And I said, what do I have to say to them? You know, I'm still shaking and baking. I'm 195 pounds, probably. I'm probably 100, you know, 155 pounds when I got here, so I was probably about 180 by then. And I remember going in there, and I didn't feel very significant. I didn't think I had much to share. I didn't have a lot of experience. But I shared what I had to share, and, you know, that they kind of, you know, they were just kind of in there, and, you know, they were really paying attention too much, you know. They were just probably not trying not to listen, you know. My sponsor gets in there, and he asks him a very pertinent question. He said, how many of you guys in here have girlfriends? And, you know, they raised their hands. He said, your homeboys right now are out there hitting it. The true story. Everybody started listening. He got everybody's attention right away, you know. So, you know, he had wisdom, and I learned from him, you know, you get their attention. You know, and he was a wise man, and he loved me, and he was my sponsor for 5.5 years. And in 5.5 years, we parted ways. Probably one of the most difficult decisions I ever made at that particular time in my recovery was to change sponsors. I had such love for this man, loyalty. I felt a sense of fidelity, but we were not in harmony anymore. We just weren't in harmony anymore, you know. And so I had to have the courage to say, listen, I'm going to move on in sponsorship. And it wasn't easy. You know, I know his feelings were hurt. I was kind of hurt, you know, but I moved on. And then I asked my second sponsor, Rick, to be my sponsor. I was up at a meeting called Topanga Tranquil. And it's this beautiful meeting up in the San Fernando Valley in the West End, man. And it's up in the mountains. And they have this big, huge, beautiful fireplace. And they light the fire. And one of the things back then, we didn't have cell phones. But one of the things now, if you go to that meeting, they don't request. They tell you, turn your cell phone off. Turn your phone off, you know. And there's an old timer up there that just celebrated 50 years clean. Who's he's the man in charge, right? And he doesn't mince words either. You know, and so I listened to what they had to say, and I met Rick at that meeting, and he ended up being my sponsor for 20 years. And he sponsored me, and he loved me, man, and he sponsored a lot different than my first sponsor. He told me, I'm not going to chase you down, Jimmy. I'm not working harder than you, is what he told me. He said, if you want what we have to offer, then you'll be willing to make the effort to get it. And he went on to explain to me some things, and he shared with the fellowship a lot of times. And he said, there's a spiritual principle here, Jimmy. You know? He said, we keep what we have by giving it away. He said, if you're coming to the meeting late, and you're always complaining, and you always have resentments, and you're not being of service, and you're selfish, and that's what you're giving away, he said, well, that's what you get to keep. That's what you get to keep. And it made sense to me. And so I'm just so grateful, man, that those people at that little noon meeting have given me a commitment for 29 years in a row. I raised my hand at 30 Days Clean and said, I'll do it, and I'm still doing it at that same little meeting. I love those people, man. They have given me my life back. You know, I've been able to serve. I've been able to see people come and go. You know, that's part of the process of recoveries, and the people that a lot of times carry the message to us, they pass on, but we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to give back what was given to us, you know, and so I stay there, and I've been grateful to stay there, and I'm so grateful for the virtual platform because it's changed everything for me. I live in Eagle, Idaho, but I can plug in every Tuesday. I can go into the prison. I can see the guys on the screen. I can hug them. God made it possible for me to hug some of these guys in person. It was why I couldn't believe it. Like, where does that happen? Where does that happen? They got this other thing called Miraculous Mondays, and they got about, I don't know how many prisons come together, but they have a meeting, and there's about maybe 10 prisons that sign on to the virtual platform. And they're in jail. And they hold a Narcotics Anonymous meeting for them. Right? So that's the silver lining that came out of the pandemic. Right? When everything shut down, man, when everybody was isolated in their houses, you know, our literature says that Narcotics Anonymous is a lifeboat in a sea of isolation. And so when the whole world shut down, what did we do? We came together. We started meetings. We started going places. We started doing things. You know, I had to learn about the virtual thing. And, you know, I had to watch gay porn and all kinds of crazy stuff on the screen. Have you ever been on a Zoom meeting and got bombed? I think, who are they trying to scare? Like, you know, this ain't scary. This ain't nothing new to me. What are you doing? Who are you trying to shock? You know what I mean? You got the wrong crowd, man. So, you know, I had to learn about all that stuff. As a matter of fact, one of the guys that helped me, you know, the other day shared for us on Tuesday, you know, he knew all the stuff. He knew how to do the computer. He knew, and you know what he did every Sunday or Saturday or Sunday? He would tell us, hey, man, if you want to learn, I'm doing a workshop. I'll teach you and train you how to do, you know, the settings and how to walk through stuff. And he took his time out of his own heart, out of his own gratitude, right? He would just train people on how to work the virtual platform. And let me tell you something that I've experienced, man. It's been crazy to watch that. Because what's happened is a lot of us got on the virtual platform and we got to meet each other. I got to meet Don. When Dawn would sign on and she was from Arkansas, I'd be like, someone's from Arkansas. I get so excited, you know what I mean? I got somebody on the meeting from Arkansas. Where are you from in Arkansas? You know? And there would be people from all over the world, you know, from England and Thailand, and it's just crazy. And so what's happened, I've been able to witness, is now people have friends in different parts of the world, and then they started traveling because they got a connection in that place.
Right.
And so we started to spread out and go and do, and we got friends that would never meet each other if it were not for the virtual platform.
Right.
I got a good friend named Andy in Washington State. He's a farmer. He'll sign in from the combine sometimes. You know what I mean? He's riding. He's a real farmer. Farmer Andy. And so Farmer Andy became really good friends with my buddy Orlando. And Orlando is a former Rolling 60 Crip gang member from South Central Los Angeles. Right? And he's confined to a wheelchair because he got shot during a drug thing. And so he's in a wheelchair. And man, Andy came down to the meeting, and him and Orlando, you know, hanging. They couldn't be it. They are so far apart in their lives, but yet they're so close because of Narcotics Anonymous, because of the fabric, because of these spiritual principles. They have been woven together, you know, in diversity, because diversity is our strength. And, you know, if you get here, man, we are supposed to be introduced and confronted with our prejudices. And I don't know what your prejudices are. I'm not necessarily talking about race. I'm talking about prejudices because I had prejudice against higher education. I had a defect of character that's called comparison. And people who had higher education, I automatically felt less than. And then I had to compensate for feeling less than. So then I talked bad about you, or I didn't want the help, or, you know, I pissed all over a free education. Whatever the circumstances were, because I didn't want to walk through the fear. See, on the other side of fear is freedom. On the other side of fear is freedom. I had fear that I wouldn't measure up. I had fear that I wouldn't do well. I had fear that you would reject me. But on the other side of that, right? Because true courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the willingness to walk through it. I love that about our literature, because our literature speaks to me. True courage is not the absence of fear. That means it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to have anxiety. It's okay to be scared. Push through. Get to the other side. It's going to be okay. And you know how I get to the other side? Encouragement from you guys. You guys encourage me, man. Rick used to encourage me all the time. He didn't agree with all of my choices, but he had always encouraged me. He always stood by me, no matter what was going on in my life, because I made some bad choices in relationships, you know. And, you know, I've known Kathy for almost 3 decades now. She knows a lot of my exes, and they don't all live in Texas. But I have a lot of exes in Narcotics Anonymous, and I don't know what happened. I go to the convention, they all seem to be at the same place at the same time. Woo, Lord have mercy. And that's not an easy thing to do, you know, to walk through the end of a relationship, you know, and have amended, and you have, allow yourself time to heal, to have amended heart. You know, how do you do that? You guys told me that good things end so great things can happen. Good things end so great things can happen. And so I use that when a relationship ended. I would say, you know what, good things end so great things can happen. Like, because I would think it would be the end. This is it. No one's going to love me like that. I'm not ever going to have a girl as pretty as that. I'm not, you know, I'm never, I can't hold. Because I could catch, but I couldn't hold. Right? Because I had the gift for gab. Listen, I got the gift for gab. I'm charming. I grew up DJing. I got, you know, my father was handsome. My father was charismatic. My father looked like Desi Arnaz, like Ricky Ricardo. He could sing. He was handsome. He was a womanizer, you know. So I some of my dad's character, I could get in, right? I knew how to get in. I just couldn't stay. Our gifts will take us places that our character won't allow us to stay. That's why we have to sort through the confusion and the contradiction. I got to do a 4-step. I got to learn to look at what makes me tick. I had to come to terms with the fact that I'm controlling, that I'm insecure, right? My sponsor told me the control will eventually control you. I remember reading the 11th step when the step working guy came out, and they talked about being a chameleon. Talking about, is this God's will? measure your, you know, if it starts off with you don't want to change your partner, then maybe it's God's will. But, you know, I would get in a relationship and she would be wearing a nice mini skirt and, you know, cleavage. And I, yeah, I like that. But as soon as I got in a relationship, it's like, put on a turtleneck. You know what I mean? Where you going dressed up like that? What are you putting makeup on for? You know, all the brokenness came out of me. All the insecurity. Please. And really what that is please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. I don't want to. Please don't leave me. That's what that is. But it masks itself as machismo-ness. You know, like, you better respect me. All that crazy nonsense that, you know, I was brought up with, man. The guys that I ran around with, you know, misinformed by misinformed people.
Right.
You know, and it was challenging, man. You know, navigating my life through Narcotics Anonymous. And I was listening to all this. I was listening to Steve and Kathy this morning, man. They were talking about their relationship and some of the challenges. And it was, and I love hearing how people meet. I just love that story. You know, and it's just, you know, I struggled in that area for a long time. You know, you guys told me, man, today's struggle is tomorrow's strength. So whatever I'm going through today, man, if I just put one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other will soon be behind me. But, you know, I got to hold on. I can't run off and be an emotional coward. I got to lean into the thing. I got to call my sponsor. I got to cry. I got to hurt. Freedom isn't free. Freedom's going to cost me. It's going to cost me honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. It's going to cost me obedience. It's going to cost me the truth. It's going to cost me talking to my sponsor. It's going to cost me crying in the meeting, telling you guys I'm hurting, I don't know what to do. There's bridges that all of us are going to cross. In 2012, man, I buried my mother. My dad died when I was 20 years old. And it was me and mama for a long time. It's just me and my mom. I'm her only child. My dad had many children before he met my mother, and it was me and mama. And my mom used to smoke. My whole life, she you know, smoked. There was soot on the ceilings. I remember at the house I grew up on. And I never smoked. The only time I put a cigarette to my lips is if it had some cocaine in it, you know what I mean? A little Cocoa Puff. We used to use like Newports and, menthol cigarettes. That's the only time. But my mother got sick and she was diagnosed with lung cancer, right? And I'll never forget this story, man. My mother, God bless her. So my mom, you know, she got diagnosed with lung cancer and so she had to go to the hospital and they removed her upper lobe of her lung. She was, you know, and they had to drain it. And it was a whole process. And she stopped smoking. And I remember we came to my cousin's wedding. I don't know what little town we were in. We were somewhere. I remember they had a Waffle House, though. I remember that. Every little town, good Waffle House. And so me and my cousin walked down to the Waffle House, and there was a little slope like this. And we were walking back up, and I saw my mother. And she was behind this pillar, right? And she had quit smoking, and my mother was like this, with a cigarette. Like she was smoking crack or something. You know, and she started smoking again, and unfortunately it killed her. The cancer came back and she wasn't able to, you know, do things as she wanted to. My mother was very independent. She did not like losing her independence, but there's a gift in all that. You know, you guys prepared me for service. See, service is not just, you know, let me just read this, man. Service is not just putting the coffee out at the meeting. It's not just putting the literature out or greeting somebody at the door or picking up the chairs or putting away the chairs. Service is not a position on a committee. It is a posture of the heart. It's a way of life that we can practice in all of our affairs. It could be simply holding the door open or as complicated as helping a loved one in the last stages of life. Our relationship to service and the way we express it changes as our humility deepens. The desire to serve is a manifestation of freedom from self. Anonymity is the key principle in selfless service. When we learn to give selflessly in service to those who suffer and to a power greater than ourselves, we find happiness, purpose, and dignity. I'm living with happiness, purpose, and dignity. And I was in the noon meet, the little meeting in the morning. I go to Conscious Contact every once in a while. Every morning, listen, if you ever want to get on a virtual meeting, they have a meeting 7 days a week. It's 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, so it'll be 9 a.m. for you guys. It's an 11-step meeting. They do 5-minute meditation. They got 600-plus people on a meeting every single day from all over the world. It's a very diverse meeting. And they focus on the 11th step, and they invite people to share on the 11th step. And they don't allow you to share. If you share once, you're banned for 2 weeks. That's it. You got a moratorium. So if they don't want people every day sharing, you know, like I was when I was a newcomer. My sponsor told me, put your hand down, you know. And they were sharing the meeting, man. They talked about great joy. Daryl P. was reading from the 11th step, the paragraph. We can be happy and content with or without the approval of others. We can find great joy. And it just hit me like, joy is one thing, but great joy. We can find great joy. I have experienced great joy. I had to wait a little while for it. Sometimes I thought I knew what great joy was, but it just seems to get greater and greater and greater later. For many years, man, I was in and out of relationships. This guy, and my friend Raymond says this, and I love Raymond for doing that because he gave me hope. He said that God loved him so much that he blinded a woman long enough for him to get married. Right? I said, I want that God. And lo and behold, the God do for me what he did for Raymond. I got a little one-year-old daughter. She's 1 year old. Her name is Mila Rose. I got a little boy who's 3 years old. His name is James Thomas. He's named after me and his father-in-law. I wanted to honor my father-in-law, who I love, who's been a really... I got lucky, man. Let me tell you something. I got lucky. I married into a good family. There's no crazy Uncle Joe and no Auntie Ken. You know, there's not a lot of craziness. They're like a solid, pretty good family. You know, everybody's got their stuff, but it's not as bad as it could be. You know, my wife had a pretty good credit score. She didn't do too much damage, although she's been to prison or jail a couple times, and I haven't. She got arrested, I should say. She had a good lawyer. So she tells the story. I said, I can't believe you went to jail. Like, you know, you got arrested. You know, cause you, if you saw her, you wouldn't think that. But she's got a crazy story. She was 5150 and all that, you know. She had to be 5150 to marry me. That's what I said, you know. But God gave me a family. He gave me a wife. He gave me two beautiful children, man. You know, and it's crazy because, you know, I get to see these things. And I remember being new. Listen, I was brand new in recovery. And I went to the Southern California Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in Anaheim, California. I believe it was in Anaheim. Kathy was the main speaker. She had 7 years clean, I think. And it changed my life. I didn't know Kathy, but something happened in that meeting. You know, there was thousands of people there. Kathy was sharing from the podium, and I felt the energy of gratitude and God and love and service. And, you know, it just encouraged me to want to just get another day clean and to raise my hand and to be a better person. And Kathy would always share about her children. She would always share about her children. She would learn these things from her kids, you know, and I'd be like, that's pretty cool, man. But I didn't have children. And it may not mean anything to you until it means something to you. It may not be applicable. My friend Raymond says, eat the chicken and spit out the bones. You know? And so, you know, I would listen to Kathy share, and I went through that, you know? And I remember at 6 years clean, I got in a relationship with a beautiful girl, and I fell in love, but it was crazy. It was one of those crazy relationships, man. You know? Like, we couldn't be with each other, but we couldn't let go of each other. You know, let go or get dragged situation, right? It was a let go or get dragged. I got dragged. You know, I got dragged. But she got pregnant, and she had a tubal pregnancy, and my heart was broken. Then she got pregnant again, and then she had a miscarriage. And so I wanted a family so bad, man, and I thought this was going to be it, and then I was upset with God. I was upset with God. Even the basic text that I have right now, to this day, the sticker from the hospital, when I went to the hospital, the day that she had to do the DNC, I got the sticker from the visitor because I always remember that, you know, on this day. I always remember that day and how I felt. You know what I did? I went across the street to that meeting at the Kaiser Hospital. And I went there and I cried with you guys, man. And I would do that with my mother. I would take my mother to chemotherapy, and I would drop her off, and I'd be strong. And then I would come to the noon meeting over in San Fernando Valley at the little pizza place, Victorio's, and I would just cry. And I would just cry, and I would try to get it together because I didn't want my mom to see that I was crying. I wanted her to feel that everything was going to be okay. And I would have courageous conversations with my mother about life and what she wanted and how she laid things out, because my mother wanted to make sure I was taken care of, and she wanted to make sure I knew where this was at and where that was at. And she started telling me a little bit of history of, you know, I would ask her, ask questions. If you have a relative, man, a mom or a dad or somebody, ask questions. Ask questions. And my friend Raymond said, man, take video, make memories. And I would take video of my mother sometimes, just going to the grocery store. You know, because she lost her ability to drive. She was very independent. She couldn't stand the fact that I had to drive her everywhere. She wanted to go on her own. You know, so I put my life on hold for a little while. I couldn't go everywhere. We didn't go anywhere for Christmas and the holidays. I spent it with Mama. And then I, you know, get late enough, and then I would go see you guys at the marathon meeting. You know, but I maybe couldn't go here or there. But I'm grateful for the journey that I was able to take with my mother. I'm grateful that God gave me the opportunity to be with her and to walk her, right, to her last breath. I was at the hospital. I was at the noon meeting. Check it out. I was at the Wednesday noon meeting, and I got a phone call from the hospital, and they said, you know, you need to come down here. Your mother's not breathing very well. And I got in the car, and I went over there to the hospital, and I walked in, and my mother was still there, and then inundated her because she couldn't breathe on her own. And I sat with my mother, and I put my hands through her hair, and I held her hands, and she had the news on, and she was out of it. She wasn't really coherent. She went into cardiac arrest when I was sitting there in the hospital. I didn't know my mother was going to die on that day. I didn't know when I left the noon meeting that I was going to go say goodbye to my mother. Our third step says, man, there is no amount of spiritual awareness that's going to take away our pain. That at some point we're going to have to deal with the death of a loved one or the end of a relationship. Mine just happened to come both at the same time. I was in a relationship. My mother died on Wednesday. She was gone the next week. We were already having problems. Her stuff was boxed up. And I begged her, please don't go. Please don't go. I was hurting, so I didn't want her to go. Please don't go. But the relationship was over. And she left. And I didn't know what to feel. I was at a place where I didn't know what to feel. I was so numb. I didn't understand what I was feeling. I didn't know what I was hearing. I would go to meetings. I didn't hear anything. The disease was so loud. And then it was so quiet. I couldn't hear anything. I was just in pain. I was mourning. I was hurting. And I would cry. And my friends would tell me, man, your mother deserves every tear. That is the price you pay, Jimmy, for the love that you share. That is the cost of love. And it's a crazy thing what grief does. Because grief is always going to be there one way or another. Every joyous occasion in my life has been tainted with a little bit of grief. My wedding day, I'm getting married. My mother wasn't there to be there. My father wasn't there. They had passed on. The day that my son was born, joyous occasion. But his grandmother wasn't there. She never got to meet her grandson. The day that my daughter was born, joyous occasion. I thought about my mom and how much she would love this little girl. And she's got blue eyes like my mom. My son and my daughter both got blue eyes. And I don't have blue eyes. My wife's eyes aren't blue. And she's got my mom's eyes. And her grandfather's eyes. My wife's father has blue eyes. So God gave me this little thing, and my little daughter has these little mannerisms. She makes this little smirky smile, just like my mother. My mother would always make this little smirky smile, like, okay, you know. Like, she really didn't agree, but she'd be, my daughter does that. And I just, you know. And so I've had this amazing gift, you know. I've been able to experience my emotions and coming here. And we went to the rehab the other day, and I just got emotional because, you know, I was missing. I was thinking, this might be the last time I see my uncle, and I was thinking about my family. And, I, when my uncle passes, I'm not going to have roots here anymore. My cousin's talking about selling the house. And I'm heartbroken, man, because where I spent all my summers is where I would come. I would visit Christmas. It would just be a house full of love and people cooking and joyous and the cousins and they got kids and everybody's gone and the house is dilapidated. And it's heartbreaking. The little barbecue place right next to the house was called the Polar Freeze. We used to go get barbecue with my mother. Yeah. It's a Domino's pizza. It's a Domino's pizza. And I remember the words of my sponsor. My first sponsor used to tell me, Jimmy, nothing lasts forever. He would always say that to me, nothing lasts forever, Jimmy. There's going to come a time where you're going to have to pray for acceptance. You're going to have to say that serenity prayer, that things change. You know, nothing remains the same. But, you know, what's all, you know, especially, and you know, our literature talks about what's up for revision? The truth. And it might not even be, I can look at one thing at one point in my recovery, it could be as clear as day, and then some experiences I've had, maybe I had some experiences, I've done some step work, and I look at that same situation from a different vantage point, and it's not changed, but my perspective has changed. My spiritual condition has changed. It doesn't have a hold of me like it once did. I can see the red flags. I got a little better. I walked away from a relationship. I walked away from a relationship. I surrendered quietly. I never surrendered quietly before. No, never in my life did I surrender quietly. I surrendered quietly. I hurt. I said my piece. I cried in private. And I let it go. And you know what? God gave me a wife. God gave me a wife. He didn't want me in that relationship. Thank God he didn't answer all of my prayers that way. Sometimes the answer is no. Can you live with a no? Can you live when God says no? And so one of my things that I've come to understand, man, is because I have freedom, is that I've been able to say yes to God and no to me. And I always said yes to me. It's not normal to say no to me. I want what I want when I want it. I want the easier, softer way. I want all the hard work without the labor. That's my condition. But you guys have taught me different. You grew somebody else up in this room. You guys gave my mother her son back. She was able to smile. I was able to be there at the end of the road for her, hold her hand when she took her last breath. I wasn't out smoking crack or getting high. And I know that's some people's situation. Like, you have to live with the guilt and the shame of not living up to your responsibilities. When my dad died, I went out and used. And I lived with that. I had to make amends. You know how I made amends? By being a good son to my mother. And I miss my dad. I would love for my dad to see his grandchildren. But I just got to pray for acceptance. It is what it is. It's the way that it is. And I'm grateful for this journey that I've been on with you guys in Narcotics Anonymous for the last 29 years. This has been an incredible journey. You know, I want to end with this last reading. It's a just for the day. And it's on May 29th. And the title is Carry Me. We believe that our higher power will take care of us. We all have times when it seems though our lives are falling apart. There are days or even weeks when it seems that everything can go wrong, is going wrong. Whether it's the loss of a job, the death of a loved one, the end of a relationship, we doubt that we'll survive the changes taking place in our lives. It's during the times that we see the world crashing down around us, our ears, that we find our greatest faith in a loving higher power. This is the line that stands out to me. No human being can relieve our suffering. We know that only God's care can provide the comfort we seek. We feel broken, but we go on. We can feel broken, but we go on. Knowing that our lives will be repaired, that is my experience, that our lives will be repaired. As we progress in our recovery and our faith in our higher power grows, we are sure to greet the difficult times with a sense of hope, despite the pain we may be in. We need not despair, for we know that our higher power's care will carry us through when we can walk when we can't walk on our own. Just for the day, I will rely on God's care through the painful times, knowing that my higher power will always be there. I have been carried time and time and time again. You guys have loved on me, man, and I've had, you know, and I want to end on a good note. I've had such an amazing life, man. I've had this crazy life in Narcotics Anonymous that I've been able to go places and travel and do things, man. I've been to meetings in Bali, Indonesia. I went to a meeting in Singapore. I've been to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in Israel in the Dead Sea. I sat in the Jordan River with 9 other recovering addicts saying the serenity prayer. My life started with that serenity prayer, man. My whole recovery started in that little noon meeting on the corner of Fairfax and Fountain in that little Methodist church with those hardwood floors and those hard metal chairs. And I was at the Jordan River saying a serenity prayer with 9 other recovering addicts. You know how I got there? Please help me. I raised my hand in a meeting. And I've been able to do all kinds of crazy things, man. I went to Alaska and I sat in the hot springs. I've been to Hawaii for the World Convention. I swam with the turtles. You know, I was smoking crack out of a car antenna and drinking Cisco. You know, you're not swimming with the dolphins when you're smoking crack, at least not, you know, literally. Dolphins and turtles and all, it just, you know, incredible stuff, man. You know, and I don't know what your dreams or your aspirations are, but I can tell you this, man, that freedom from active addiction is a gift within itself, and if that's all I ever got, I was overpaid. I was overpaid. The obsession to use drugs has been removed, and because of that, I've been able to take an opportunity and keep unwrapping gift after gift after gift after gift, you know, and that's why I always start by thanking the gift giver. Because he never stops giving, and I cannot outgive God. Yeah. So when the 7th tradition basket goes around, I put some money in. I got 29 years clean. You know what? Narcotics Anonymous, World Services get $29 a month straight to their bank account. That's just the way it goes. You know, I can't put a dollar in the basket anymore. That 1995, we were putting a dollar in the basket. I don't embarrass my gratitude by saying, oh, I'm grateful, here's a dollar. Because a dollar's not going to make it anymore. And then when they started doing the Venmo stuff, I was real embarrassed. I'm going to put $2 on the Cash App. $2? Like, yeah. I was like, yo, I better put 5 at least. I feel, you know. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, if I have it, I can give it. And if you can't afford the money, man, put away the chairs. Right. Make the brisket, you know. Hug somebody when they come in the door. The Serenity Keepers, man, that are here. Those hugs, Danny hugs. A loving, simple loving hug can make all the difference in the world. I went to a meeting at Cope the Dope the other day. I walked in, and there was a guy, he didn't know me. Nobody knew me there, really. And there was a guy that was there, and I'm standing there after the meeting. He just, how you doing? Started talking to me. Nice guy, man. He made me feel welcome. He didn't know I had 29 years clean. I probably thought I was a newcomer. But he reached out and said hi to me. He made a difference, you know? And I think he had a couple of years clean. He was just talking about some relationship stuff and da-da-da-da. And then I saw him the next day at the noon meeting. And that's what we do. We can make a difference. Never underestimate a hug or a smile or opening a door. You know, it costs nothing to us, but it's priceless to the recipient. So I want to say in closing that listening is an act of love. So I want to thank you for loving me.